All right, so we are holding on test design on the bays, just past the middle of the almost line. Okay, so we talked in the mission, and we've been talking for several missionaries now about various details of dinim that have to do with Tashmish. One of them is, we learned in the Mishnah, we said that Beit Shammai had said that one possibility you can do as far as the fact that you have to, that Beit Shammai had held that you have to do multiple bedikas between each Tashmish. So Beit Shammai had mentioned one possibility to Shamish La'or HaNer, that they should have relations by candlelight, and then that way they can check the bedikas. And we mentioned that in a braisa at the beginning of the Gemara as well. So now we're going to get into a discussion which is going to relate to that, where we're going to clarify that issue. Gemara starts off. Amar Rav Yechanan. Also, the Adam Shi Shamish Mitasa Vayyam. Rav Yechanan says a person is not, a couple is not allowed to have relations during the day. Amar Rav Hamnona, Mikra.
What did you do with
First of all, that was before Matan Torah. That's a little bit different. No, because before Matan Torah, they didn't have Torah. They knew the Torah because it's always kept the Torah before it was given. But Rambam writes at the very beginning of Hilchos Ishus that before the Torah was given, it was perfectly okay for a man to meet a woman on the street and decide that they're going to have relations, and they go into a private place and they have relations right there on the spot after the Torah was given. You have to have chuppah because you have to have kiddushin, and you have to have chuppah. Similarly, also before at that time, it was allowed to kedusha, paying her after the Torah was given, such things also. So yes, but by them it was before Matan Torah. But Rabbi Yechanan is saying also, Adam Shi Shamish Mitasa Vayyam, a person is not allowed to have relations during the day. Amar of Hamnuna, Mikra. So Rav Hamnuna says, what's the pasuk that shows that idea? Shenema, the pasuk in Iyov, when Iyov is having all of his tzaros, and he starts complaining about, I wish I had never been born, he says an expression like this, Yoivad Yoimi Volod Boy, would that the day that I was born had been destroyed. In other words, I wish that day had never existed. V'halayla Amar Hora Gavet. And the night that said that a man has impregnated, a man, meaning his father, had impregnated his mother. Therefore, Rav Yechanan says, Rav Hamnuna is saying, explaining Rav Yechanan, Laila Nitzin Lahiroyin, Vayim Lanitzin Lahiroyin. So we see from that only the nighttime is an appropriate time to impregnate, not the day. So that's why he says, Laila Omar. Rish Lakish Omar Mehacha. Rish Lakish says, we're going to see later in the Gemara is going to explain a practical reason behind this. But first we're going to bring Sifu. Yeah. Rish Lakish Omar Mehacha, Boyza Drachav Yomus. Rish Lakish learns it from a Pasuk in Mishlei. The one who does it. It's not a matter of halacha. It's a matter of proper behavior. It's a matter of proper behavior. It's proper behavior. Hold on. Rabbi Yechanan says that's fine, and we're going to see later whether there are exceptions to it. But anyway, sometimes the Gemara will say osur on something which is osur because of danger or because bad midas or whatever, without it being strictly one of the 613 mitzvahs. And Rish Lakish Amar Mehacha Boizav Drachav Yomus. Rish Lakish learns from a different pasuk: the one who does his ways shamefully will die. So the reason why it's shameful, the Gemara is going to explain later, Rashi mentions over here, because the ultimate reason why we don't want them to have relations by day is because then it's light. He may see something unattractive in his wife, and then it's Gana Olav, that he's going to consider her unattractive thereafter, and it's going to affect their relationship. So therefore, Boize, when he's acting in a way that can lead to Bizoyin, Drachav, Rashi explains that the word Derech sometimes is used in Tanakh as a euphemism for marital relations, Yomus, he will die. So it doesn't mean literally that he will. Well, that's true. Sometimes the Gemara does use Derech in relations, but in Sukkim, you also have sometimes, Rashi brings from a passage, for example, also in Mishlei, Derech Geber Ba'alma. Sometimes the word derech is used as a euphemism for marital relations. And yomus, the Marsha explains what it means is basically like this. The first half of the pasuk over there says, a shomer mitzvah, shomer nafshoi. The mitzvah, he says, refers to puravu. It's called mitzvah because it's the first mitzvah in the Torah. So a person who's careful with that, shomer mitzvah in the singular, shomer nafshoi. So he protects his soul in the sense that will lead to, he'll have a good, happy marriage, and he'll have children, which eventually then, after he passes away, they continue to live on after him, so therefore he lives in this world. Boys a derecha, but here you have the part that the Gemara is quoting over here, but if he acts in a way that can bring to shame or gnai or whatever, where therefore he and his wife may not be comfortable around each other anymore, then he may not have children, and then Yomus, then he's going to die in this world, in the sense that eventually he doesn't leave children after them. Okay. So the question is, but a shlokish high curl to Rabbi Yochanan and my judge today. Okay, but Rabbi Yochanan brought a different pasuk, the Laila Amahora Gomer. So what is Rishlokish doing with that pasuk? The answer is Boyle the Khidarish of Khamina Ba Papa. Rishlokish would say that we need that pasuk in Eo to teach us what Rav Khamina Ba Papa dashed. The Darish of Khamina Ba Papa. Oise Malach Hamamuna Alhahiroyan, the Malach who is in charge of pregnancy. Laila Shmoy. His name is Laila. Now, what do you mean, a malach in charge of pregnancy? So Tosfos mentions, we have a famous Gemara in Tainus, we're also at the end of Sanhedrin, that says that there are three keys of things that Hashem doesn't delegate to anybody. The key of childbirth, the key of tefamesim, and the key of ring. So over here, Tosfos says that what it is there's a malach in charge of pregnancy, but as far as birth, as far as the actual childbirth, that Hashem, so to speak, reserves for himself. Some of the other Mephoshim explain that what it means is Hashem is the one who decides to begin with whether she's going to become pregnant. That's in Hashem's hands. But afterwards, what happens to her during the pregnancy, how the pregnancy develops, that Hashem, so to speak, delegates to the malach. Okay. Anyway. So the malach in charge of pregnancy is named Laila. So therefore, he says, Laila Oma Hora Gover does not necessarily mean that only by night can you impregnate. It means that the malach named Laila announced that he is impregnated. Namely, what happened? Oise malach hamamuna halora in Laila, right? The notal tipper, he takes the draft of seminal fluid that has in it the actual sperm and the actual egg that's going to develop into this baby. He stands it up, so to speak, in front of Hashem. And he says, Hashem, we need to know. What have you decided is going to happen with this drop? What is going to be the life history of this baby? Giver a cholosh is going to be a strong or a weak person. Chacham a tibish, a smart person or a stupid person. Osher a oni is going to be rich or poor. However, the Gemara points out that either, by the way, that's an interesting thing, that either Rosh or Tzadik lo karma. However, now the Balach does not ask Hashem to announce whether this person is going to be a Rosh or a Tzadik. And that is Kiddush Rav Chanina. That's like what Rav Chanina says. The Amar Rav Chanina, Hakol Bidei Shemayim, Chutz Miras Shemayim. Famous expression. Everything is in the hands of Hashem except for fear of Hashem. That a person has Bechir HaChavshah. The person has free will, whether to do the right thing or not. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, V'afi Yisrael, Mo Hashem Alekecha Shoyal Mimach. Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Jewish people, now Yisrael, what does Hashem, your God, ask from you? Kiyim Neira, only to fear him. Meaning like Hashem, so to speak, has to ask it. So has to ask us to do it because he doesn't decide it ahead of time. I'm on the first page of Tanya. Everything else, yes, but not whether we said after the Dalfi Devil brings on the first page of Tanya. Yeah, right after the part over there where it says where he brings over there that Eov's complaint. Ribbono shel Olam, you created tzaddikim, you created rishayim. So the Dalfi Devil immediately asks, what do you mean? You see more Gemara, tzaddik v'rasha like Amar. Yeah.
See that his children would be Oshayim.
The Tosef asks that question. What it is he was shown what's going to happen. Meaning, in other words, as we know, there's a famous thing that the Rambam points out, that Hashem's thoughts are not like our thoughts. Hashem's way of knowing things is not like our way of knowing things. So the point is, therefore, Hashem knowing something in advance doesn't force that it's going to be that way. So in other words, he's showing to Chizkio because then Chizkio had a choice. Is he going to say, well, then I shouldn't have children, but the fact that he was a tzaddik, after all, he wouldn't have refrained from getting married and having children were it not for the fact that he was shown that. There's also an interesting idea that the Rabbi Yonasan Ibershitz brings in Yaris Dvash. There's a difference, so to speak, that is brought in, that you have similar ideas in the Siddur. There's a difference, so to speak, between Hashem speaking and Hashem thinking. We're saying over here Hashem doesn't speak whether the person is going to be a tzaddik or a rasha, because then that would be definitive that Hashem has determined in this world it's going to be this way or that. But Hashem thinks. Hashem can think it. Hashem himself knows it in advance. It remains in Hashem's thought. Anyway, the point is that
sometimes Hashem makes a decision of.
So Hashem knows in advance whether the person is not. That's the thing. Hashem knows in advance what choice he's going to make, but he still has the free choice to actually do that or not. Hashem knows. No, that's the thing. That's what the Rambam points out. We can't understand that paradox. We don't understand how it can be that Hashem knows something in advance, but yet he gives us the free choice. So you have different later thinkers after the Rambam talk about different possibilities, how we could possibly understand that with analogies that we can think of, or whatever. That,
something I never
understood.
Yeah. Regardless of the fact that he chose children to be shy, he never told him not to marry.
No, he didn't. That was Cisco's choice, and that was the wrong choice, which is why he became sick. And that's right. Of course. He was a tzaddik, but he made that mistake. He thought that if I'm going to have children that are going to be Rishayim, then I should make the choice not to. And Yeshaya has to tell him, don't mix into Hashem's secret business. Yes, exactly. Right. Okay. Besides which Tosfos points out, you have certain things that do depend. There are certain things that do depend on mazel. So you have, you actually have a whole discussion towards the end of Masech Shabbos that discusses the question whether yesh mazal yisrael or ein mazal yisrael. We usually grow up thinking ein mazal yisrael, but the Gemara discusses over there some opinions that yesh mazal yisrael. And the Gemara explains ultimately what it can mean is yesh mazal yisrael. A Jew does have mazal, however, they're also beyond mazal in the sense, like we had in last week's parasha, Hashem takes Avraham and puts him above the stars and says that you're beyond that. So a person can be under the mazal, so a person can raise himself higher than that. No, forget about denying Hashem. We're talking about you can have a person who goes about their life in the normal way, and therefore Hashem says, okay, your life will run according to the normal seder of the way I created the world. Or a person can make himself higher than that, where he deserves Hashem's special hashgacha that in a way beyond nature. All right, whatever. That's a long conversation. That's not serious. Okay. Anyway, the point is that Rav Chanina bar Papa is saying the Malach is named Lila. So therefore, when it says Lila Oma Hora Gover, then Rav Yechanan can say, Rish Lakish rather can say that pasuk has nothing to do with the fact that you have to only have relations at night. It's talking about the name of the Malach. Marsha, by the way, brings a fascinating thing in that connection related to this past week's parasha. You have the pasuk when Avraham is fighting against the four kings, says Vayecholik Aleihem Lila. He divided against them at night and defeated them. The Gemara in Sanhedrin explains that what it is the Malach, the same Malach named Lila, came to assist Avraham. So Marsha says, what's the connection? Why is the Malach of pregnancy, of conception? So Marsha explains like this: Nebuchadnezzar's mazel, when he was conceived, the Malach is asking Hashem what's going to be with him, and it was going to be that he's just going to be this mighty man, Gibur Chayyid Lifnei Hashem. Now that it's time for Avraham to defeat him, though, and Avraham has to be able to overcome him, then that same Malach came and weakened Nebuchadnezzar's mazel, not Nebuchadnezzar, Nimrod, I'm wrong, that's right, I said Nebuchadnezzar before, I meant Nimrod, whatever, his mazel, in order that Avraham should be able to overpower him. No, obviously Hashem delegates it, so to speak, to the Malach, because the Malach is the one who accomplishes it in this world. But yeah. Okay, so that's Rish Lakish. Rav Yechanan, so what does Rav Yechanan answer to that? He says, okay, I can agree that pasuk is teaching us that Malach is named Lila, but in Cain, if that's all the pasuk is teaching us, nichtetko gever hoira, then the pasuk should have said, the night that said gever hoira, a man has impregnated. My hoira gover, why instead is the word hoira first, which therefore is right adjacent to the word Lila, or to the word Omar rather, means, Lila nitin lahiroyim, v'yom nitin lahiroyim. From that we can learn, from the word Lila, sure, we can learn that the Malach's name is Lila. But in addition, from the fact that it puts hoira before gover, it puts the verb before the noun, teaches us therefore that also Lila is associated with heroyim and daytime is night. Okay. Hoira maloshin heroyim, maloshin impregnating. Yeah, the word hora means pregnant, and the word hora over here means impregnating, that he impregnated his wife. Okay, what is Rabbi Yechanan doing with Rish Lakish's pasuk Boiz et Zerach of Yomus? The answer is Rabbi Yechanan would say that we don't use that pasuk to teach us anything about not having relations during the day. Rather, we use it to teach us that a person who acts in the degrading ways that are described in Sefer Ben Sira is bad. Sefer Ben Sira, we've talked about many times before, the Sefer that was written by that says Ben Sira is the grandson of Yirmiyahu. He wrote the Sefer of various Divrei Chachma. Many parts of it are in the style of Tanakh, but it's not in Tanakh, and in fact there were some Gemaras where the Gemara speaks very sharply against learning it. The Gemara also says over there that you can learn the good things in it. Eventually the Lashon Kodesh original was lost. They found parts of it in the Dead Sea Scrolls and whatever.
An important
Well, because the fact is, I mean, the guy's a grandson of Yo, so he obviously knew stuff, and he was a Chacham and everything, you know. He wrote good things, but the Gemara points out over there in Sanhedrin that there's also certain silly things in that sefer, and therefore you need to be able to separate the wheat from the chaff. It wasn't written with Ruach HaKodesh after all. And there was the real danger because it's written in the style of Tanakh that people might think it to be a sefer of Tanakh. So the Chachamim tried to, you know, keep it at arm's length, like it's quoted from in a lot of places in Gemara, including here. In some places, the Gemara even quotes it as if it's a pasuk. Even over here, also kiddushim, which is the expression that usually is of a pasuk. But the fact is, it's not part of Tanakh. So eventually, what happened was the original Lashon Kodesh of it was lost. They found parts of it in the Dead Sea Scrolls, or what was left was a Greek translation, which you can find in Goyish Bibles. Okay, anyway.
The Hebrew translation.
So no, they found parts of the original Hebrew. They found the Dead Sea Scrolls, not the whole thing, but enough of it. Okay. So in Sefer Ben Sira, it says Shloisha Sanesi. There are three things that a person does, says Ben Sira, that I hate them for it. But Abba Lo Yahati, and then there's a fourth one which I don't like. It's not as bad as the other three, but I still don't like it. What are they? The first thing that I hate is Sar Hanugol Beveis Hamishtar. It's a Sar, meaning a prince, meaning a Tamad Chacham, Rashi says. Hanugol, who is regularly found Beveis Hamishtar, in places where they're drinking. And so he's going there all the time. It's degrading to him as a Talmud Chacham that he's going and drinking in bars or whatever with people. But Amri lo Sar Hanu Gon. Another version of it is not Hanu Gol that he's regularly there, but Hanu Gon, which Rashi explains Hanu Gon means he talks a lot, which is also not becoming for a Talmud Chacham. Tosfos brings from the Aruch a different explanation that Hanu Gon comes from a word that means to complain. That people complain about him in the taverns and the bars or whatever. In other words, Marshall explains that, for example, that he does business dishonestly or whatever. Like they're talking badly about him because he himself, in other words, is a dishonest person, and therefore like people talk about him. But Amrila Sar Hanu Guz, and then a third version is that we're talking about a Sar, a Talmud Chacham, who is angry a lot. So therefore, then he looks like a ridiculous, silly person. Marshall points out, you have a famous Gemara in Eruvin that says that you can tell what a person really is, the koso, the kiso of a kaso, in how he acts when he's drunk, how he acts with his money, and how he acts when he's angry, and the three versions we have over here. The three things we're mentioning over here reflect those. Sar Hanu Gol Beveis Hamishtar, reflect how does he act when he's drinking. Hanu Gon, how does he act in business? Are people complaining about that he's dishonest? Meloshin Rogan, which is a word like the Tirognu Ba'alechem, you complain in your tent. So it means where people... Well, it's a Marshal explaining. So it says specifically like complain about him, he's dishonest in business.
Sorry?
Well, yeah, hi. We're holding at the bottom of Tech Zion with Dave. Okay, so that's the second one that Ben Sira is saying I don't like, and the third one behind Moshe, that's the first one rather. The second one behind Moshe Sheves b'Miroi Mekeres, a person who sets up a place to teach Talmidim in the high places in the city. So first of all, what's the problem with that? Rashi says first of all he looks like a Baal Geiva. And then like the only place you can teach them, like everybody has to see him, and also because practically speaking, people pass by and they're always interrupting them. So therefore, it's not a good thing. And number three, in the high places of the city, meaning like he sits like in the middle, up there in the middle of Eastern Parkway or something, and starts teaching to somebody. And number three, the third one, Ben Sira says I hate, is somebody who holds on to his organ when he urinates, which we learned the other day in the Gemara that that's a bad thing to do because it can lead to Moshe Zedel of Atala. So those are the three things. Ben Sira is saying, I hate people who do that. So therefore, so again, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, the pasuk that Rish Lakish quoted before, Boiz Adrach of Yomel, a person who acts in his, who does his ways in a degrading way, that's referring to these kinds of people who act in a way that degrades them. And what's the fourth one that Ben Sira says, I don't really like, somebody who walks suddenly into another person's house. Actually, Rabbi Yochanan says not just somebody else's house, even his own house, he shouldn't just walk in suddenly. What if people are doing something private, for example? Okay. Besides not just that people are doing something private, Rashi mentioned that people are doing something private. But there's a Medrash also, for example, that mentioned one of the Chachamim one time came home suddenly, unexpectedly, after having been home for many years, and his wife was so startled that she died of shock. So yeah. So the idea you should not. Okay. In this connection, Amar Rav Shimon ben Yochai, Arba Dvarim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Soinan, Va'ani Eini Oyhavan. Rav Shimon ben Yochai says there are four things that a person does which Hashem hates them. So before we said Betzira is saying, as if he being a boss of a dom, he's saying that I hate them. Now Rav Shimon ben Yochai is saying you should know Hashem hates them. Va'ani Eini Oyhavan, and myself, I don't like them. Why is he using that expression? There's a variety of different...
Why did he start Betzira before Rav Shimon
ben Yochai? The fact is maybe Betzira is earlier. Ben-Sira lived a couple hundred years before Rav Shimon ben Yochai. So why is he using this expression, Hashem hates them and I don't love them, and I don't love him? There's a variety of different explanations. One very interesting one that's from the Maharal, the Oruch HaNer, says something similar, is related to something that we say in Tanya. The Alter Rebbe mentions in Perek Yud of Tanya that you have a Tzaddik Gomer and you have a Tzaddik She'eni Gomer. A Tzaddik Gomer hates anything that is against Delacourt, whereas a Tzaddik She'eni Gomer is not quite, hates anything that's against Delacourt, anything of Clipper. A Tzaddik Gomer will hate it, as opposed to a Tzaddik She'eni Gomer doesn't have this complete hatred for it, which shows, therefore, fine, a Yetzer Hara he doesn't have, but it shows he hasn't completely transformed his Yetzer Hara for good. His Yetzer Hara, I mean, he hasn't completely transformed it for good. So therefore, Rav Shimon ben Yochai is using an expression along those lines. He's saying, out of humility, I'm not necessarily a Tzaddik Gomer, I don't completely hate the things that Hashem hates. Like this, a Tzaddik Gomer would tackle Sinas Nesim, as the author ever quotes there from Tillim. But me, I just I need any Oyavan. I don't like them, but I don't hate them with the total passion that a Tzaddik Gomer should. Anyway, what are the four things? Some of them are the same ones as we had in the previous list. Hanichnas lebeitei pistim. Number one, somebody who comes into his own house suddenly. Then so chloim lebeit chaver. Needless to say, if he walks suddenly into somebody else's house. So we just said, that's no good. Number two, somebody who holds on to his organ while he's urinating, as we said the other day. Number three, a person who urinates while he's undressed in front of his bed. So actually, Rashi elsewhere explains, the Gemara brings this to Shabbos as well, that we're not just talking about if he's undressed. Even if he's dressed, the point is, usually what it is if a person is dressed in clothes or pajamas or whatever, it's not that hard for him to leave his bedroom and go someplace else to urinate. But if he's undressed, he's not going to bother getting dressed in order to go out. He's likely to just urinate right there in the bedroom, and that's a disgusting thing to do. And in fact, Tosfos brings also from that same Gemara, it's one of those things, it's a segula for becoming poor. Basically, you have a Gemara elsewhere, you have a Gemara in Tzachim that mentions that there's a malach in charge of... Right, just the fact that he's urinating near his bed is a disgusting thing. He's making his bedroom all disgusting like that. And you have this Gemara in Tzachim that mentions that there's a particular malach in charge of poverty, where when he sees slovenliness and, like, you know, uncleanness and dirt and whatever, then, you know, he's more likely to make his home.
Does it cleanly.
Well, no, there's no such thing as urinating cleanly. So if he urinates into a keli, that's something else. It's only urinates onto the floor. So yeah. Okay. Now the Gemara and Shabbos mentions that there are various details about it. Depends whether he's facing towards the bed or away from the bed, whatever. The Tosfos also brings a different gerusa over here, that it's not mashed in mayim orim luknim etosin, not that he urinates undressed in front of his bed, but rather that he has relations undressed. So Mephoshim explained, because they have to be tmiyistis even when he's having relations. Now, Mephoshim explained, that does not mean they should be wearing clothes. In fact, you have Gemaras elsewhere that say that they shouldn't. But during Tashmish, what it does mean, though, is that they should be covered up above themselves with a blanket.
Some people, super mahmed, clothes you shouldn't.
It's not so simple in halacha that concept you have is something based on the way I'm based on what it says about Rabbi Eliezer and Nadari maybe, but in general, it says over there that's one possibility Tosfos learns. I think Tosfos talked about over there, according to one explanation of Gemara over there, that he would have his wife wear her sinner even when they were having relations, whatever. Let's not get into the details of that, but anyway, the consensus of most poskim is that what it means over here, if we say that he's not supposed to be shamish mitaseh orum, it means not that they should be not wearing clothes, they shouldn't be, but that they should be covered with a blanket. Okay. Number four, v'hamashamish mitaseh b'fnei kochai, the fourth one on Rav Shimon ben Yochai's list, is somebody who has relations in front of any living creature. So what does that mean? Amalei Rav Yehuda l'shmol v'afilu l'fnei ha'barim. So Rav Yehuda asks Shmuel, does that mean even if there are mice in the room, you're not allowed to have relations? Amalei, so Shmuel tells him, Shinina, which is, of course, the way we've had many times before, is Shmuel's pet name for Rav Yehuda. It means the sharp one, it means the one with big teeth, whatever. Anyway, Loi, no, we're not talking about throwing mice in the room. Ella, to go and show base pointy, what we're talking about, what Rav Shimon Yochai is talking against, is, for example, the people of a certain family, the pastor, he probably said the name, we don't know what it is, but whatever, a certain family, they would have relations when their male or female servants were present. Now, Tosfos points out we have to be talking about it was dark or it was at night, so they're not actually seeing, but still, it's not sneezing to do that when they're awake and in the room. Because still, they know that it's going on, and it's still unsneezing. So that's an unsneezing thing to do. However, the Gemara says, in whom my daughter, that family which acted that way, it wasn't Stam there, the Prusim, they had, what Tosfos did they dash, and what source did they bring to say that they were acting correctly, which therefore Shmuel tell us that you should know after all they're not. They said, from this week's parsha, when Avraham says to the people accompanying him, to the Akedah, he says, who is it? Shmuel and Eliezer. Shvulachem toy machamur. You stay here with the donkey, from which we learn am hadoyim lachamur, that to a certain extent avodim are considered like donkeys. So therefore, this family took the view, the same way as there's not necessarily a problem to have relations when there's a donkey in the room, the same way there shouldn't be a problem to have relations when there's avodim or shvach. But Shmuel is telling us they're wrong because that's wrong. No. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, no. Rabbi Yehuda asks, are you saying, when you say, l'shnei kol chai, does it mean even night? And Shmuel is saying, no. What we mean is human beings. Even if there are avodim and shvachas, who are doyim alachamur, nevertheless, the fact is, they're human beings, and it's still degrading to do that. Still a lack of sneers to do that. Look, for example, a certain household, where they would have relations in front of their male or female slaves, the inu my daughters, as far as them, what are they doubting to think that it's mutter? But you're not allowed to do that. With that said, though, the post can talk about various details in that. For example, if the other people in the room are sleeping and they're not aware of what's going on, then technically it's mutter. They have a couple of other details like that. Still, there's still that a Baal Nefesh shouldn't be using any of those attainments. You should be alone in the room. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Rabba Barav Huna Makartish Zagi de Kilsa. Rabba Barav Huna, before he and his wife would have relations, he would ring the bells that were on the canopy around the bed. What's the point of it? Rashi says, this way, this way, it was a signal to everybody to get out of the room, because he and his wife need their privacy.
That's an expression, Makartish?
No, Makartish, no, it means exactly, Makartish means he would ring, he would tinkle, Zagi, the bells, the kilsa that are on the canopy of the bed. So Rashi explains that was meant as a signal to the people in the household to get out of there, because he and his wife are going to be having relations. Tosfos says, on the contrary, isn't that a lack of fear? It's like you're announcing to everybody you're about to have relations. So Tosfos says what it means is, the Tosfos brings it, well, okay, so right, so you have some Mephoshim explain that it wasn't that they knew that they were going to have relations, exactly, it's just they wanted some time to themselves, right? But Tosfos anyway brings from the Aruch a different girsa, which is that not zogi, which means bells, but rather gazi, which is a type of insect. So he would drive out all of the insects, the gnats, or whatever that were in the room, because he wanted to be machmir. This that we said before, you don't have to worry about mice or other non-human creatures. But Rabba Barav Huna, according to this version, would be machmir and even get the gnats or whatever out of it. Wave them all out the window. I don't know, whatever, as many as possible. On Abaye Boli Dibbi, by the same token, Abaye would clear out the flies. Yeah. Rubber, Boli Paruchi, and Rubber would get rid of all the mosquitoes. Same idea, they wanted to be machmir, that they're literally not going to be having relations with Snei Kolchai in front of any living creature, not just human beings. That's not required off the Alacha. All that's required off the Alacha is that there shouldn't be other human beings there who are away. Okay. On Rav Shimon Yochai, in this connection, we mentioned Rav Shimon Yochai had said four things that Hashem hates and I don't like them. The Pashas, according to what the Gemara is saying here, it would be allowed, I guess, because we're saying that even this family thought that this particular family that Shmuel was criticizing, they thought Avodim and Shvachos are like a Chamur, therefore it's allowed. Shmuel was saying that's not so, because the fact is they are human beings, the Pashas. In other words, the Pashas, in other words, the dog, I guess, would be allowed. I don't know. Here's another thing Rav Shimon Yochai says, since we're talking about things that he says you shouldn't do. Hey, Dvarim Hain, there are five things. There are five things where if a person does them, he's liable for his own life. In other words, he's putting his own life in danger. The damei b'roshei, and his blood is on his head. In other words, again, the penalty for the consequences are his fault. And he, in other words, Rashi says, he is going to be, after he dies and he goes to the base in Shamayla, he's going to be called to task. Why did you do these things and then put your life in danger unnecessarily? They are as follows. Number one, ha'oichol shum kaluf. Number one, somebody who eats peeled garlic. Number two, bottle kaluf. Or if he eats peeled onions, and we're going to see soon, the Gemara is going to explain the details. Hold on. Okay. Or beta klufa. Also, all of these things, I guess, are counted as one. Or beta klufa, or peeled or shelled eggs. Number two, v'ashoyta mashkin mezugin sh'over alein. Yeah, I mean, the peeled egg. Hold on. Okay. One second. We're going to say, okay. And v'ashoyta mashkin mezugin, or somebody who drinks mixed liquids, like, for example, wine mixed with water, all of them sh'over alein alayla. All of these things, the peeled eggs or the peeled garlic or whatever, is only if they were left out overnight. No, I don't think we've had it before, isn't it? Okay, so it's a no. If you peel an onion and you eat it right away, no problem. If you cook it or whatever, that's a problem. We're talking about if it's left overnight. Another one, v'halon b'veit akbaris.
Left peeled overnight?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. It's left peeled overnight, exactly. V'halon b'veit akbaris. Hold on. V'halon b'veit akbaris. Also, somebody who stays overnight in a beit akbaris, in a cemetery. Also, a person who cuts his nails and throws them out into the street. Each of these things, the Gemara is going to explain soon the details about them. So hold on. And the last one, the Hamakis Dam on the Shamish Mitofte, somebody who left blood and then shortly afterwards has relations. And it's dangerous.
Yeah, what's the
connection is, you know, because letting blood, I mean, a person loses a certain amount of their, strength, and therefore afterwards having relations can be dangerous, I guess. But in those times, they used to, when they left blood, they'd often take a lot. Okay, anyway. So let's start out. Let's explain what Rav Shimon ben Yochai means with each of these details, with each of these statements. Ha'oichol shum kolof kola. We said a person eats peeled garlic or onions or eggs if they're left overnight. So the Gemara says, va'afakav the manchi b'stilta. Even if those eggs or whatever are placed in a basket, u'metzaydi v'chasimi, and even if the basket is closed shut and sealed shut, nevertheless, ruach. The siri means that they're closed, bachasimi, or like tied up. Siri means closed, I mean, tied up, bachasimi and sealed. So even though you would think nothing's going to get in, nevertheless, ruach ra shor aleh, and nevertheless, an evil spirit rests on such things, and therefore it's dangerous to eat them. However, the Gemara says, v'lay amoran elad l'shir b'hu ikran oikri tosan. Now this would only apply if he didn't leave some of the roots or some of the peel on them. But if he left some of the roots of the onion or the garlic, onion and garlic themselves are roots. So Rashi explains, we mean like the hairs that stick out on the end of them, which are, you know, you have those things themselves, the bulbs that grow underground, and then you have the actual roots, the little hair-like roots that stick out of them. So if that's left on them, or their shell, left one bar, then there's no issue with it. Which is why you have a concept that even nowadays, if we peel eggs, we leave some of the shell on them before we put them away. We put them in the fridge, for example, for the night. But we leave the minhag is to leave some of the shell on them, because then the Gemara is saying over here, then there's no issue of ruach ra. Okay.
So you peel them.
So you peel them
when you leave them.
See, but no. So you can peel them before. You can peel them the day before. But then what you do is you leave some of the peel on them when you put them in the fridge or whatever.
You said it peeled.
The shell of the egg. The shell.
They have a peel.
Yeah. No, we mean the shell of the egg. I know, for example, you have the minhag that when you do achnos to lecheder, when you bring a kid to cheder for the first time and they read from Vayikra and they lick honey from the aleph bays and whatever. So you also have an egg that has a pasuk written on it. So you have, you know, you don't want to first wake up in the morning and start preparing the egg and writing the pasuk on it. It'll take too long. So you prepare the egg. You want to shell it the night before and write the pasuk on it. So then what you do is, again, that's what you think. So you shell it. You write the pasuk on it. I've used in the past a strong solution of coffee. You write it with a toothpick. Anyway, and then afterwards, I'll put a little bit of the peel back on the egg and put it in the fridge. Then we said, we said if a person drinks mixed drinks, like again, wine mixed with water, let's say, or whatever, that will last overnight. Talmud of Yehuda Amar Shmuel who shall learn with clay maskers. So Yehuda says the name of Shmuel, that's only if they were left overnight in a metal container. Amar Papa, who claim Nesir could claim maskers them. So the Papa says you should know it's not only metal kalim of Nesir, which is a type of earth. It's not quite a clay, but it's a type of
paper.
No, it's not paper. No, Nesir is a type of it's a type of alkaline earth. They make kalim from it. So those could claim maskers them. Those have the same status for this purpose as metal kalim. So then it's dangerous. But for example, if you leave the drink overnight, let's say in a kli cheres, then there's no problem. Rabbi Yechanan said the same thing. The problem is only if they're left overnight in a metal keli or clay nester for clay matzah damu, and if they're left in a clean nester, then it's like clay matzah. A number of achronim talk about that. Not necessarily do all these things in the Gemara apply nowadays. You see, nowadays you leave drinks in metal containers overnight, you don't have a problem. One interesting explanation, I think the Chazon Ish says this, is that not necessarily a metal kalim made nowadays the same way as they were in those days, and if it's not exactly the same process, then it's not necessarily an issue. Okay.
It could have been because of rust.
It could have been because of rust or bacteria or who knows what. Yeah, kind of then. Okay. Then we said v'halon b'veit hakvaros. By the way, obviously we have to be talking about with kalim, right? So we're saying that the, no. So nowadays we're not really cautious for that business of drinks that are left overnight, right? Because again, our metal kalim are not necessarily like this. Mind you, we're talking about over here only where the kalim was covered. If it was uncovered, then anyway, you had in those days the whole matter of mashkim gluim of uncovered liquids where a snake could have drunk from them, and then it's off there anyway. But yeah, okay. Then the next one in Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's list was v'halon b'veit hakvaros, where a person stays overnight in a cemetery. Now, why would a person do that in the first place? Kadesh tishra olav ruach tumah. He might be doing that in order that a spirit of tumah would come and rest on him. Like basically, he wants to use it in order to be able to do magic. Or Rashi says aruch zimasainayim, because not necessarily real black magic, but he'll be able to use it, let's say, to perform sleight of hand or whatever. So it's also in and of itself, but in any case, dimnin demisachinle, nevertheless, those shadim or ghosts or what have you that he wants to use for this purpose, they may endanger him, they may attack him. So therefore, that's why Shimon is saying that if a person does that, then he's liable if anything happens again. Okay. And then we
hear a story about that.
No, that's done. Okay. The next one we said is if a person cuts his nails and throws them out into the street. So why is that bad? Because it can happen that a pregnant woman walks or steps over them, and that'll cause her to miscarry.
Well, then you can say the same thing when it's a home, if she's wife's pregnant.
That's true. But because at least if it's at home, it's at a particular place, you can tell her, let's say, don't step over there. But if it's in the Shushan Abbey, you can't go stand there and be telling her.
We say that's just burn them.
Ah, one second. Hold on. That's in the next piece of Gemara over here. By the way, the Elder Rabbah on tour brings a very interesting idea. Why at this? Why would there be this gula that if a pregnant woman steps on cut nails, she might miscarry? This is a very... But why Dapkin nails? I mean, there's lots of things. So he gives a very interesting explanation. Before the Chetei Tadas, it says in the Drashim, Adam Rishon and Chava, both of them had their entire body was covered with a fingernail-like substance that would keep them safe. That's why Matzah Shabbos, we look at our fingernails, like so to speak, to remember what we lost. Now, what caused them to lose it? The Chetei Tadas. Who triggered the Chetei Tadas? Chava, because she was convinced by the snake. And so therefore, like in a certain sense, so you could say that a woman is responsible. So therefore, no. So like in a certain sense, she's responsible for the fact that we lost that covering. And therefore now, if a woman steps on these nails, then it's likely to harm her.
What's the connection?
The connection is, and because like it's like a kitrug against her, like she steps on the nails, and like it, so to speak, it reminds in Shemayim, hey, wait a minute, you know, her forebear Chava is the one who brought all about this whole thing about a man. Yeah, fine, okay, but you know, women, men, women, women, okay, whatever. Anyway, that's the Elliot Abba says it. Okay. However, the Gemara says, "V'loyam moron ella deshakel v'gnustri." Now, this that we're saying that the fingernails are dangerous is only if he cut them with a nail clipper or scissors or whatever. V'loyam moron ella deshakel v'yode or dekare. Also, it would only apply if he cut both his fingernails and his toenails together. V'loyam moron ella delegoz midi basrayhu. Furthermore, it would also only be dangerous only if he didn't cut something else after it. But if after he cut his fingernails, even if it was both fingernails and toenails, if afterwards he cut something else, less one bar, then there wouldn't be a problem. The fingernails are not dangerous. However, the Gemara says, actually, that's not correct. L'kula milsa chashinin. We have to be careful even in those cases. Even he cut him with nail clippers, even he only cut his fingernails or his toenails, even he cut something afterwards, nevertheless, they're dangerous, and therefore you shouldn't be throwing them out in the street. But now comes the famous thing, which you said, there are three things the Chachamim said about what can be done with fingernails. Surfon chosid, if a person burns them, then he's a chosid. Koivron sadik, if he buries them, then he's a sadik, which is less than a chosid. Because after all, when you bury them, they might get unburied.
Not necessarily.
Eventually, of course, eventually they'll decay. But let's say, so you bury them shallowly and whatever. Not only you bury them 6 feet under, you bury them, you bury them a couple of inches in the ground, they can easily get uncovered. Zerka and Rosha, but if a person throws them out, then he's a Rosha for the reason that we said, because a pregnant woman may step on them and miscarry.
And if she puts them in a bin or something like that.
A garbage can, L'chora, it could get out of there. With that said, for example, nowadays it's very common people flush them down the toilet. Fine, there's no possibility that a woman is going to step on them. Maybe not. I'll tell you what Tosfos says on this. A very famous thing that Tosfos says on this. Why, if he burns them, is he a chassid?
Right.
So first of all, obviously, because then there's no possibility that they'll harm it. But also, Tosfos brings a very interesting thing from the Aruch, that a person burning his nails, or more generally it says elsewhere, anything that was originally attached to his body, is bad for him. So Tosfos says, if a person burns a nail, Tosfos himself says, V'chein kol davar abomina adam. If a person takes anything that came from his own body, for example, hair or nails or whatever, and burns it, then it can cause him damage.
So
he's a chosid that he's machmir to burn them even though it may harm him. He's willing to take a risk. That's the point. He's willing to take a risk of harm to himself rather than a risk of harming somebody else. There's a very famous thing about this, which I think is brought in Ayom Yom as well, that they ask the Alter Rebbe, what is a chosid? And the Alter Rebbe explains to them, a chosid is somebody who's willing to put himself in danger even that another Jew shouldn't be in a possibility of danger. And they asked it, one second, they asked him, where do you get that from? And he pointed them to the Tosfos over here, where we see that this person is willing to take on himself the danger of that burning his nails about
another Jew.
He is, because now there's no possibility that another Jew is going to step on those nails and get harmed. So that's exactly.
He could have reached the same result exactly in a different way. Just put him in a garbage can and
a garbage can they could fall out of. But like this, they're burnt for sure. Then that's it. They're goners. Now, like I said, you do have nowadays people commonly throw them down the toilet. Choices brings that.
You burn
a part of your body, then it can go. Yeah, it harms you, right? Alpha Pisha Mazikoi, Choices says. So he's willing to take that hezek rather than another Jew should even have the chance of a hezek. So that's Alter Rebbe famously defined. That is the definition of what a chassid is, as we see from the Choices over here. If you burn them, there's no possibility that they may become uncovered. In the Aruch, it explains, burning his nails is harmful to him. And actually, this is more generally true of anything that comes from a person's body. The Gemara mentions something similar in Shabbos about blood from a nida. Because it can harm her, she's not going to put it away for a cat to eat it. So therefore, Tosfos says, therefore, a person who burns his nails is a chosid, shemachmer the surfen, he's machmer on himself to burn them, even though it harms him. That's the definition of a chosid. Okay. There is, by the way, elsewhere the Gemara talks about, for example, in Moed Katan, for example, the Gemara talks about that in principle you could throw them, let's say, in the Bet Medrash or someplace where women don't commonly go, because then there's no issue, there's no possibility. That, nevertheless, we're saying over here, a chosid won't use that. Right. Fine. Okay, then we said the next one, the last one on Rav Shimon ben Yochai's list that can put a person in danger is if he lets blood and then has relations. Why is that? To Omamar, as we say, elsewhere in a Braisa. Makis damu mashamash mitos. So if a person lets blood and then shortly after that has relations, havim le bonim viskin, he'll end up having children who are weak, who are physically weak. Both the husband and the wife let blood and then they had relations, having let blood and bale rasan. Then they're going to have children who have rasan, who are extremely weak. Rashi brings from a Gemara and Ksubas that rasan is that a person actually has some kind of bug in his brain. It might mean a literal bug, it might mean a tumor, I don't know, whatever it is. It makes them extremely weak. It also causes skin problems and all kinds of,
Who would let blood
beforehand. Omar, I don't know, because it was a common thing in those days to let blood. Omar Rab, the way I'm learned, I would like to me. However, Rab says this, that we're talking about the danger of it, is only if the person didn't eat, didn't taste something after having let blood before having relations. I will toy midi, but if he tasted something in between, less one ball, then there's no problem with it, because that helps restore his strength.
Okay,
the fascist could be anything. I don't know. When you go nowadays to give blood, they usually have orange juice and they usually have orange juice and designer. Okay. Because I've damned it. I've done it before. Okay. Amr of Chisa. Also, let's get back to the main topic, which we started talking about having relations during the day. We said Rav Yechon and Rish Lakish gave various grounds from Sukkim why not to. So Amr of Chisa, also Loyla Adam, she shamish mitosa. But a person is not allowed to have relations during the day. Shenemra v'yahafkel orecha kamaycha. Because the Bosnian says v'yahafkel orecha kamaycha. So what do you mean? My mashma, where do you get, what does v'yahafkel orecha kamaycha have to do with anything? Amr Abaya, as we said, as Rashi had brought before, Shema Yira Badova Maguna, because if he has relations during the day when there's light to see, he may see something unattractive on his wife, this is Dana Olav, and then he'll consider her unattractive thereafter, and therefore there'll be a lack of avos Yisrael.
What's her lashon? Tisgana Olav?
Tisgana Olav, that she will be unattractive, she'll be repulsive, literally mean what? Lashon
Gnai.
So she'll be repulsive to him, and then there's a lack of avos Yisrael over there. Okay. Amr Rav Huna, so Rav Huna says in this connection, Yisrael Kedoshim Heim, the Jewish people are a holy people, so they don't just indulge themselves whenever they want. They in Meshamshin, Mitesein, Bayon, they don't have relations during the day. Amr Rav, Vim Hoya, Bayis, Ophel, Mutter. However, Rav says there is a condition on that. If it's a dark house, and usually Bayis, Ophel, and Shach usually means a house that has a room, whatever, that has no window. No, that has no windows. So therefore, no light can get in. So then it would be mutter, because if the whole reason is that you don't want to see something unattractive, then he won't see, because it's dark in there.
So therefore,
what do you mean? That's the point. Bayis also usually means a room that's naturally dark because it has no windows. And further, Rabbi says, V'tamad chacham ma'ho b'ksusay u'mashamish. A tamad chacham, who is going to know basically to act in a sneer-stick way and not to just indulge casually in relations to... He can make the room dark with his clothing, for example, like he can take a piece of clothing and then put it and hang it over the window to artificially darken the room, or mishamish, and then he's allowed to have relations even during the day. Because again, it's a once in a while thing. He's not going to get in the habit of doing that because he knows better. Yeah. With that said, Mekorshim say that even that, it would only be the Rambam actually uses the expression that even a Talmud Chacham is only allowed to do that mitznei sodach gadol, like if there's a desperate need, like if he's really, really feeling that he needs to have relations, let's say, for health reasons or whatever, then yeah. Okay. So now the question is, now that we've said we have various Amaroyim who are telling us that you're not allowed to have relations during the day or by light because of this reason, because of Gnai, what about Tanan? We learned in our Mishnah, Oy Tashamish La'oraner. We said that Shammai says one possibility. What do you do as far as the Bedikis between one time having relations and next? One possibility is she just saves them all up and checks them in the morning. But the other possibility is, or she'll have relations by candlelight. No, by candlelight, the Tasha sounds like they have relations by candlelight. But based on what we just said, how is that allowed?
One second. Why does it imply that they have relations by candlelight?
No, because that's the word tashamish la'oraner means you should have relations by candlelight. The Shammai is saying again, the Shammai is saying that you need, in our Mishnah, that you need to do bedikas before and after every tashmish. So they want to have tashmish multiple times in that night. They have to do a bedikah in between each one.
Right.
So, whereas the Sibyl says you only need one at the beginning and one at the end. One at the beginning before the first one, and one at the end after the last one.
But if you have one, they both agree on the same thing.
No. Right, obviously, then there's no practical difference. The point is, in other words, that the Shammai is saying, what do you do with all those bedikas cloths? So either you save them up and look at them in the morning, and fine. So that won't tell you at the time, and during the night, whether you're allowed to continue having relations. You'll assume that it's still good because the first one came out good. And after that, you'll continue, and you'll assume everything's good. If you check in the morning and you find that one or more of them is bloody, then you know you have a problem, then you know you have a chafetz, etc. But the other possibility, that Shammai had said, Oy Tashamish La'oraner, or she can have relations by candlelight. So it sounds like you're allowed to, and we just said that you're not allowed to. The answer is Eimat Tivdei La'oraner. The answer is change the wording of the Mishnah. But Shammai doesn't mean that you have relations by candlelight. It means that she should check, that she can check the Bedik cloth by candlelight. So they'll have relations in the dark like they're supposed to, but then they'll light a candle and they'll check. Okay, Toshma. Okay, well, let's look at... Let, Okay, let's look at another braisa. Even though the Chachamim said that if a person has relations by candlelight, then it's a degrading thing to do. So it continues that nevertheless, in this case, the Shammai is saying you can do that. Ema, the answer is have boidit mitosila or anir arizim aguna. But Shammai is saying, even though it's true that really checking the bedikah cloth by candlelight is also not so good, because after all, with only candlelight, you may not see everything in such detail. Nevertheless, that's an acceptable way to do it. She can check by candlelight, and that's good enough. That's one possibility rather than saving them all up for the morning. But still doesn't mean that the Shammai would say that you can actually have relations like that. The Sillel says you don't need it anyway. You just need one at the beginning, one before the first Kashrut, and one after. But Shammai wouldn't say, the Sillel would say it's not necessary. Once you finish the last Kashrut, and you do the last, once you finish the last Kashrut of the night, and you're doing the last Bedikah, you don't need to look at it at that point. You'll look in the morning and see. But Shammai, the ones who are saying that you need to do a bedikah between every tashmish, they're saying one possibility is after the first tashmish, you'll do a bedikah, then you'll check it by candlelight, and then you'll blow out the candle, to, whatever, you'll put out the candle and then do it again.
So the last bedikah, you do it when in the morning?
No, the last time that night, you expect that relationship.
So that could be there.
No, it's not going to be by, you're going to be up all night. You're going to be doing it a couple of times, and then, eventually, yeah. Look at Toshma, the Shalbeit Munbaz HaMelech. We have another braisa that says the household of King Munbaz, the famous Munbaz from the family of the kings over there who became Derim, famous story.
They were from a
country called Khabiev, in English it's called Adi Abin. Nowadays it's like in northern Iraq or western Turkey or something, eastern Turkey or something like that, whatever. Anyway, so they famously became Derim, they did a lot of good things for the Jewish people. Anyway, so the Shalbeit Munbaz HaMelech, for the family of King Munbaz, there were three particular things in Halacha that they did, and for that the Chachamim would speak of them with praise, that they did the right thing. Number one, they would have relations by day. Now that's the question, what do you mean? We just established that you're not supposed to do that. Number two, they were Gerim by this time, we're talking about. They were Gerim. Number two, Ubodkin Mikesei and Mamila Parhava. Number two, when they're doing the Bedikah, before, after, whenever they have to do Bedikah, they would use Mila Parhava, which is actually defined as cotton. Cotton is good. It's very white. It's very clear white. Therefore, even a tiny drop of blood will be noticed. Rashi brings another explanation that Mila Parhava means very clean, soft wool. Same idea. Okay, so that's another thing the Chachamim praised them for. And number three, the Noyagin Tum of a Tara B'Shlogin. Number three that the Chachamim praised them for is that they follow the Dinim of Tumah and Tara when it comes to snow, which the Gemara is going to start talking about at the end of the Amud, what's going on over here as far as the Tumah and Tara of snow. We're going to see. Hold on. Anyway, the point is that we're saying Katoni Miyam, Mishamshin, Mikasein, Bayoim. So the first one on the list is they had relations by day. So we just said you're not supposed to. The answer is Ema Boidkin Mikasein by Yom. No, what it is the Chachamim didn't praise them for having relations by day. That you're not allowed to do. The Chachamim praised them for checking the Bedikah cloth in the daytime rather than using this thing that we said before that you could check by candlelight. They would make sure to check them only during daylight, and that way they're going to clearly see whether there's anything
else.
It means to check before or after or whatever Tashmish, yeah.
The women check themselves.
No. It means to check having to do with relations. Right. Yeah. As Gemara says, in fact, Hachinami Mistaber. Yeah, it has to be logical to say that. Of course, it can't mean that the Chachamim praised them for having relations by day. The Isak died of Mishamshin, because it literally means that they had relations by day. Maskirin Oysen Lasheva. Would that be a reason for the Chachamim to praise them? Okay, maybe it's Mutter, but to say that they would praise them, like as if they did something extra good. Yeah, this Enochanami, actually, you could answer that. Maybe, indeed, there's good reason that in their particular case, the Chachamim would praise them for that. Why? The Agav, the Ika, Onus Shena, because all this we were talking about before, there is the disadvantage of having relations by day because he may find her Dvar Gnai, etc. But on the other hand, there is this. By night, you have Onus Shena. You have a person wants to go to sleep. The man wants to go to sleep. He's not really so interested in having relations. If he's doing it, he's doing it just basically out of duty. And really, he doesn't really particularly, he's not really particularly interested in being with her, and that's not a good thing. The Gemara mentions in Dvarim that you're not supposed to have relations under such circumstances. Therefore, Miganya Ba'afe, so just the opposite, because he's tired and he just wants to go to bed, he just wants to go to sleep, and therefore she may be unattractive to him. So therefore, for them, in Meforshim say in particular, we're not talking about the average person, yeah. For the average person, fine, you know, they have time at night, that's the proper time to do it. But base mundas, I mean, they're kings after all, you know, during the daytime they're busy running the country. During the night also, you know, they don't have a lot of, a king doesn't have a lot of downtime. So therefore, you know, yeah, if they have to exert themselves to do it by night, then you know, they may not get along with their wives so well. And therefore for them, there's a particular thing maybe that they have a reason to do it by day and for the Chachamim to praise them for that.
They were from Goyish kings?
They were originally. They were Goyish king. They were Goyish royal family, but they became Gerim. The whole family became Gerim. Either Rabbi Yaakov Emden, I think, wants to say that maybe for the same token, the same thing might apply to the Talmud Chacham. We said before about a Talmud Chacham having relations during the day, same idea. In other words, he's busy learning Torah at night, so he doesn't necessarily have time for having relations at night. So therefore, in his case, it might be acceptable to do it during the day, because otherwise, if he just forced to do it by night, then, yeah, he's...
What's
going
first, learning Torah at night, or...
Well, in other words, the point is, it's all a question of saying that you don't want her to be a gnai. You don't want it. You don't want that she should be unattractive to him. So if, in a particular person's case, it makes it... that the attraction is likely to be there more during the day when he's alert rather than by night where he's just trying to sleep. Yeah.
But between learning Torah at night and having relations with one's wife, how do you decide?
Yeah, I guess you have to talk it over with your wife. I don't know. Okay. Okay. All right. Then we said another one of the things that the family of Munbaz did, which we said the Chachamim praised them for, is Boidkin Mikasein B'Mila Parhava. We said that they would do their B'dikas using Mila Parhava. Again, now she said it means either cotton or it means clean white wool. So it must have been Messiah of the sheep. Mila literally means some kind of soft material. Some kind of soft material. Parhava, we're not sure. I don't know. Steinzel said he couldn't find a source for the word. Okay, anyway. Maybe. All right. Okay, the Messiah Leila Shmuel. This statement supports what Shmuel said. The Amar Shmuel, Ein Bodkinas Amita, El of a Pekolim, when you're doing a Bedikah, says Shmuel, you should only be doing it with cotton, with pieces of cotton. Yeah. Or with clean white wool. So according to the various explanations of what Mila Parhava is, then Beis Munbaz is doing exactly that. Amar Rab, the Rab says in this connection.
Not as good as cotton.
Well, if it's clean, soft, then it could be. Omer Rav, Hainu de Kiavoy Hossam, Hainu de Kiavoy Hossam. So Rav says, now that Shmuel said that, now I understand something. When I was there in Eretz Yisrael, Rav lived for many years in Eretz Yisrael. He was a Talmud of Rebbe. When I used to live in Eretz Yisrael, he left Eretz Yisrael when he was older and moved back to Babel. He was born in Babel. He was raised in Babel. And later on, at some point, he moved to Eretz Yisrael. But that's not so simple. It depends. In his case, he had a reason to, a story in Yom, or whatever. It's a long story. Let's not get into it right now. The point is, anyway, he wound up going to Babel. As we learned in Cholin, he helped reestablish Torah there in places in Babel where there were total Amoraksim. So he accomplished a lot. Anyway, the point is, he says, when I was living in Eretz Yisrael, Ba'arei Shabbatos Hayu Amri, on Erev Shabbat, the peddlers would go away, which Erev Shabbat is in particular the time when Talmid Chachamim should be having relations that night, because then they're not busy learning as much.
Erev Shabbat means...
Meaning Friday night. So on Erev Shabbat, during the day, before Shabbat, merchants, peddlers, whatever, would be calling out, would be going around, Man boy pekuli benahama. Who wants to buy pekuli bundles of cotton for nahama, for bread? So Rav says, I never understood what they meant. But now, based on what Shmuel is saying, I understand what he meant. So what do we mean? What do we mean, bread? So you have another euphemism that's used in Tanakh for marital relations is bread. You have the famous process, for example, that says by Yosef with Potiphar. It says that Potiphar left everything, all of his affairs, in Yosef's hands. He didn't check after him. He trusted with Yosef and everything. Except for the bread that he ate. And Rashi explains on the pasuk over there that that's a euphemism for his wife. He didn't entrust his wife to Yosef because his wife is awesome. His wife herself tried to seduce Yosef. But the point is, so we see that lechem is a euphemism for a wife. Lechem Ashur Horichol is a euphemism for a wife for having marital relations. So when these peddlers were saying, who wants cotton for bread, what they meant is, who wants cotton for bedikus, ridiculous when you're going to have relations with your wife. So Rav is saying, I never understood what these guys meant. Now, based on what Shmuel is saying, that you're supposed to use kokolin, that you're supposed to use cotton, and now I understand. Okay. Amar Rava, so Rava says further in this connection, Kami Shachti de Kitna, worn out linen, pieces of linen cloth, Mali the Bedika, are good for Bedika. The point is, Rashi says, if they're worn out, then they're white, actually. So Rashi says they're whiter than new ones. The new ones, apparently new linen garments sometimes are a bit off-white. As they get used, then they become white. It depends what kind.
Like,
I guess it depends what kind. Yeah, I guess so. Okay. So 1 second. We're going to talk about what you mentioned about soft also. We'll get back to that in a minute. So the Gemara says, "Any, is that so? Well, Tanad Menashe, didn't they learn in Bright in the Yeshiva of Menashe? Ain't both gonna submit the loy be'ed odin v'loy be'ed shofar. You're not supposed to do bedikas with a red cloth or with a black cloth, because the whole point is you want to see blood against it, and it's not going to show up. V'loy be'pishdan, and also not using linen, ela b'pakolin, only using cotton, or b'tzemer naki v'ra, or with soft clean wool. So you're not supposed to use linen." The answer is like kasha. There's no contradiction.
We said before
that you said Robert is saying you're supposed to use, you can use worn out linen garments.
Yeah.
But now this Bryce is saying you're not supposed to use linen. Like Pishtan. The answer is like
kasha. Worn out
Pishtan. That's the answer. Like kasha. Have a kidney. Have a money to kidna. First of all, one case can be talking about using actual flax, and the other one would be using linen garments. The Robert is talking about linen cloth,
right.
And Dvei Menashe is talking about actual. It's talking about raw flax. The Iboy theme, or another possibility, Hava money to Kitna, both of them can be talking about linen cloth. Hava Chabdi, Hava Shachti. One is talking about new ones, one is talking about old ones. So according to Rashi, again, the point is new ones are not quite so white. They're off-white. Therefore, blood may not show up on them, clearly. Whereas once they're worn, then they're whiter. Other Rishonim talk about other possibilities. One of them is indeed what you mentioned about soft versus hard. New ones are stiffer. So therefore, because they're stiffer, first of all, you have a problem. She may not be able to do a thorough bedikah b'chorin of a stuff in going into all the crevices and everything. And another point also, that Maram Rufenberg, I think, says that one. And another one they point out is a new one, because it's stiffer, is more likely to scratch her. And then you're going to have blood coming out. She's going to think she's coming, which she's really not. So for all those reasons, worn ones are better. Okay. So that's nowadays. The particular cloth they sell nowadays are made out of cotton.
So worn but washed.
Right, obviously. It has to have been washed and checked for things, of course. Okay. We said about, now let's get to the third thing. We said that Dvei Munbaz, we said Noyagin Tumavatana Beshlogin, we said that they followed the genome of Tuma and Tara when it comes to snow. So let's analyze that. Tananahostam, we learn in a Mishnah, it's actually a Braisa, but anyway, Sheleg Eina Loi Oicho V'Loi Mashke, snow is not considered for purposes of halacha either a food or a liquid. By default, in other words, just snow that fell on the ground. Chishiv Olav L'Achila, on the other hand, if a person thinks about it, now in general, we know, we've learned many times, that a person has a machshava about something which is not normally food, he has a machshava to eat it, that can make it that's considered food. We talk about it in Cholin, for example. So, but over here, if he had in mind to eat the snow, Eina Matama, Tumas Ocha, nevertheless, it does not have the tumah of food. L'mashke, but if he thinks that he's going to drink it...
In the Mishnah on Ikraos, it doesn't
fill
a mikveh, right?
Actually, it can. We have over there that Rabbi Shmuel argues that it can't. Hashel again in Malat and Mikveh.
Right.
But the Mishnah says over there that actually the people of Medva, of the city of Medva, said,
it.
No, not just they did it, but they said that Rabbi Shmuel actually one time told them, you can make a mikveh to begin with out of snow. You can bring snow and melt it over there, and then you'll have yourself a mikveh. That's how they do nowadays, even in places where they don't have, where they don't have a steady rainfall, where months may pass, places like Southern California or whatever, then yeah, sometimes what they'll do is they'll bring snow and then put it in the mikveh. Yeah. I don't know if they can melt it, actually. I'm not so sure if that's allowed, but they can leave it to melt by itself, right? Okay. Lamashke, on the other hand, if a person has in mind about snow that he's going to drink it, the tumah tumas mashkin, then it does have the tumah of liquids. continues the Braitha, Nitma San Banarachila no Gumashi. Chishiv Olavlach, okay, yeah. Nitma Mitzah, so if some of the snow becomes Tomei, then Loi Nitma Kuloi, the rest of it does not become Tomei because we don't consider it to be attached. Every snowflake is considered its own independent thing. So only the place where the Truma touch becomes Tomei. Yeah, well, they touch each other, but they're not considered. In fact, you have actually a couple of Achronim talk about why not. Why isn't it considered connected? And one among the answers is one from Reb Shimon Shkok, who says even if we consider that, yes, one snowflake is touching the next one, which is touching the next one, et cetera, it's called Maga Besa Starim. It's talking with the place where they're touching is concealed. So you can't see the actual rest. So therefore, it wouldn't be considered. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So therefore, so if some of it becomes tame, then only the area where the trauma touched becomes tame. The whole snowbank or whatever. Nit how mikzasa nit how kolay. On the other hand, when it comes to making it tahor, if some of it becomes tahor, then the whole thing becomes tahor. Meaning, Rashi describes, we know famously that you can't be metaher food or drinks by putting them in a mikveh. However, there is an exception for water. Water, if it became tame, you put it in a keli, you dip the keli into the mikveh so that the water of the mikveh flows just slightly over the rim of the keli. And therefore, the water in the keli is mixed with the water in the mikveh. If you do it all at once, then it'll have the same thing, but then you're going to have all your good water is gone. See, all you need is that it touches the mikveh water slightly. And then once it touches slightly, then it's bottled to the water in the mikveh, and therefore it becomes tahor. So over here, if you had snow that somehow became tamei, let's say a dead sheret fell on it or whatever, so what you do is, same idea, you put it in a keli, you put it in a mikveh, you let a little bit of the mikveh water overflow into it, and then even though the water didn't touch all of the snow, it only touched a little bit of it, nevertheless the whole thing is tahor. The Gemara says, "Hol gufa kashya." Now we seem to have a contradiction. So the point is, in other words, that again, Beis Munbaz did this. So, you know, the Aruch Hamer, I think it is, talks about two different possibilities. Either what it is we're saying over here that even though it doesn't have the dinim of food, nevertheless, Beis Munbaz would be machmer on themselves and treat it as if it was food because people might not be familiar with that detail, or that it means that they were careful with these halachas, even if that. Okay, anyway. So the Gemara says, "Hol gufa kashya." We seem to have a contradiction in the Braita. We're saying if some of it becomes tame, then the whole thing doesn't become tame, implying that it's not considered all connected. But then we're saying that if some of it becomes tame, then all of it is. Well, the implication is all of it became tame. Because otherwise, you don't have to say, I'll be
not tahor the whole thing.
Not just that, but the point is, if we're saying if some of it becomes tahor, then all of it becomes tahor, yeah. That itself implies the whole thing became tummy. But we just said the whole thing doesn't become tummy, only the place the tumma touched. The answer is, Amar Abaye Kagun Sheheviray Al Aver Tanur. What the Braita, Mishnah, whatever, is talking about is, let's say he took the snow and passed it over the open air space of an oven. So now, suppose this oven had a sheriff inside it. We know that a kli cheret is mekame from its airspace, so the whole inside of the oven becomes tame, and therefore anything that goes over the opening of that oven is also going to become tame. Namely, da Torah heidal kli cheret, because the Torah tells us clearly about a kli cheret.
So it's an oven made of kli cheret.
No, yeah, the oven is made of kli cheret. Afilu mole chardol. No, right. Most ovens in those days were made out of cheret. Even if the oven is full of mustard seeds, so you only have the outer layer, the point is mustard seeds are very small, even though only the outer layer of them is touching the walls of the oven, nevertheless, everything that's inside that oven becomes tummy, because the oven, unlike, for example, if you have, let's say, a metal keli that was full of mustard seeds, and the metal keli with tummy, only the seeds that are actually touching the walls of the keli would become tummy, would become erishim, or whatever, the ones that are touching them would become a sheni, etc.
But the seeds that touch the seeds would not?
Well, they would become a sheni, and whatever, eventually it peters out, because tumma only goes so far. But with a kli cheres, the whole inside space of the kli cheres becomes tummy. So therefore, by the same token over here, you took the snow and passed it over the top of this kli cheres, which is tame. Same idea, the whole thing is going to become tame. Not just the part that's actually touching the sides of the kli cheres, but all of it. Because it was all inside the airspace of the kli cheres. So that's the point. That's what we mean to say. That's fine. Afterwards, you take the snow and put it in a keli and dip it in a mikveh so that the water flows into a little bit of it. Then you're good, and now the whole thing is tame.
But at the time that you busted over the Klicheret,
the whole thing, everything that was over the airspace of the Klicheret, even though it didn't touch the Klicheret, became Tomei Nachas. Okay. I think we'll stop over here because the Mishnah, one it's a new Mishnah, and to explain that Mishnah and the Gemara on it is going to require us to digress a little bit into anatomy. But we've got to start fresh with that tomorrow. Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.